morning, everyone. This is Susan Wingate, and I am the host of Dialogue Between the Lines, where every Tuesday and Wednesday and every third Thursday of the month on Zoom, we have another show, which is a lot of fun for me because I'm all alone on an island. But seriously, it is wonderful because we have such great guests. Our guests are across the board genres. Sometimes, rarely, I get a nonfiction guest, but it is just amazing for me to be able to speak with my wonderful guests. And also, I just want you to know thank you for also listening to my wonderful guests. It's because of you that we have Dialogue. We concentrate, again, on fiction, but for other genres, you can contact me. I'll either accept or not, which is, the going thing. But fiction, yes, always. And you can find us at dialogue-betweenthelines.com. You can also find Dialogue on my website, which is susanwingate.com, and you can find it on the podcast page. So please check us out at Dialogue there. But you can also check out my books, Dear Moon, How the Dear Moon Hungers won the for Best Fiction, which was amazing to me. I was just so honored and thrilled. For the 2020 Pacific Book Awards, which is a regional book award. So it was really, really wonderful to get that award for How the Dear Moon Hungers. You can check that out there, too. It's getting some great reviews. So please go over and look at my book page. But enough about me. I want to tell you about my guest today, who is Gary Bengier. He is a writer, a philosopher, a technologist. And after a career in Silicon Valley, Gary pursued passion projects studying astrophysics and philosophy. He spent the last two decades thinking about how to live a balanced, meaningful life in a rapidly evolving technological world. This self-reflective journey infuses his novel with insights about our future and the challenges we face in finding purpose. So this is a little bit about his novel, which just released Monday, September 7th. And he is going crazy, of course, because it's all like a flurry of busyness during these book release times. This is called Unfettered Journey, and it is one of the most anticipated novels of 2020. Unfettered Journey is a captivating and fast-paced futuristic love story rooted in hard science, physics, and philosophy, a story about survival and resilience in an imperfect world. This speculative fiction novel is a guaranteed page-turner filled with powerful characters in quests for meaning in their lives. Gary Bengier, please, thank you for being on the show. I'm so happy to have you on, and I hope I'm saying your name right.
It's pretty close, Susan. It's Gary Bengier, and I'm delighted to be here. And you know, I woke up this morning here in San Francisco, and the sky was an eerie red glow to it. The fog had rolled in, and we actually have a lot of these fires burning in Northern California, so the smoke is around. And even now at 10 o'clock in the morning, there's this eerie orange glow. So it sort of reminds me of one of the scenes at the end of my book when Joe is running through the streets of some city with the power flickering in and out, and you're going to wonder what's going to happen next. So,
goodness. Well, and you know, we've been getting that red glow in the moon and in the mornings as well, in the sunrises and sunsets up here in Washington. So it is the California right now is in a state of emergency, and it's very sad. And although we are getting some amazing, you know, amazing views, it is very sad and concerning, I'm sure, for many people.
It is, and I think, as I said, it reminds me of scenes in my book, which is not dystopian. It's sort of a mix between dystopian and utopian, actually, maybe somewhat like our own times today. Because it's set in the future in the year 2161, about 141 years from now. And in that time, you can imagine that we still have some problems that are unsolved. So I try to write a very hard science, realistic vision of the future in a place that you could imagine that you might actually live in.
Well, let's talk about that. And you said you write a very hard science. Now, let me ask you, I know that your background is in the tech world. Tell us how you actually, when did you start realizing that you wanted to write novels?
Well, actually, I started off from the other side, as you had mentioned. After I retired from a long career in tech, I went back to school, actually. I backfilled an astrophysics undergraduate degree, redid all the math that I had forgotten in 30 years, and then I got interested in philosophy. So I backfilled a philosophy undergraduate degree, and I actually sat all the exams. I took all the physics labs and all that sort of thing. And then I got deeply involved and interested in philosophy of mind, and so I completed a master's degree in philosophy of mind and focusing on what is the mind? You know, what is that I that is at the center of it? What is that I that is you, Susan? You know, what is it? What is that I that is the I for all of our readers? Who is that, and what is it? And so as I became immersed with those kinds of philosophical questions, that encouraged me to actually write some fairly rigorous academic work. And there's actually, that's embodied in a book entitled Unfettered Journey Appendices, which is fairly academic. And the novel, then, Unfettered Journey, is sort of a more approachable version of that philosophy, but it's really a love and adventure story set in the near future. So that's how got from philosophy into writing a novel.
Wow. And, you know, some of the greatest novels have just been stewed in philosophical questions. I'm thinking right now of Anna Karenina. That just popped up for whatever reason, which is a fabulous read. And it also mixes philosophy and religion. And I know that yours does something similar. Do you want to talk about how you have how you've combined those two?
Well, that's a farther, because you're right that Unfettered Journey is a fairly layered and fairly deep novel with lots of different layers and levels of meaning. And one of them is the question of, can we find some kind of spiritual basis in a modern world? And can we find some purpose in this world when there's so much change going on? How can we do that? And so that's one of the themes. How can you find purpose, especially if we sort of roll forward when AI and robotics will continue to be more important? We're going to see more and more jobs being taken away by the automation. And if you just run that forward, we can easily see that there will be fewer and fewer jobs, and there will be fewer and fewer things for the average person to actually do. And so I think we're facing that as a real social challenge. How will you find purpose when you won't find it necessarily in the typical things that we do now? How do you do that?
Right. And, you know, we're facing that right now with the jobs moving toward more energy. I'm thinking energy, the energy industry moving toward more, less fossil fuel and more renewable fuel and energy. So we're seeing that right now. We're seeing the growing pains from that with a lot of everything that's happening in the economies throughout the world. So tell us, you mentioned the AI, and this is a part of your story. Why don't you tell us about your main character and his problem and what happens after the story begins?
Right. So the main story is an AI scientist named Joe, and he seeks to create robot consciousness, and the story takes Joe to a small college where he tries to progress that quest, and so that's the opening of the story. So focusing on AI and robotics, there's obviously a lot going on in the field. We have deep learning algorithms that now will translate languages. There was a study by one of the major international consulting firms that suggested by the middle of the century we'll have, 50 to 70% of going away because of all this automation. And so we see that as a big issue this century. And I do believe it will be one of the two most impactful technologies of the century. It's AI and robotics and bioscience. Those will fundamentally change human life and existence in this century, and so we have to figure out how to deal with that. But now let's turn to just AI. As some of the futurists suggest, the next thing we know, we'll all be cyborgs, or we'll have robots doing amazing things tomorrow. And I actually don't believe that. I have, I'll say, a more engineered hard science view of the future in that regard. I liken the development of AI to, say, the automobile. Sure, it was invented in 1880, and by early 1900s, we had Henry Ford, and we had automobiles all over the place. But the reality is, it took maybe a century to get the automobile to where it is today. You had to develop windshield wipers, automatic starters. You had to all the electrical systems now, and all that adds to the what we think of as a car. And then you had to build all the roads. You had to develop a legal structure that dealt with injuries. And so all of those social changes also had to take place before you got the car we have today. And I think that's the reality, a hard science look at AI, that it will take a while. So we're not going to have robots walking around tomorrow, but we can also imagine that it's just going to keep on improving. And it makes sense that rather than to re-engineer trillions of dollars of infrastructure, the robots will probably be about the size of us because they'll fit into our living spaces. So think about that in a hard science basis. About 18 months ago, I attended a workshop at the Santa Fe Institute, and the title of the workshop was AI and the Barrier of Meaning. And actually, most of these top AI researchers for the last 40 years, they were fairly cynical about how long it would take. I was shocked that they were not in the forefront of saying, yes, it's going to change tomorrow. They actually were on the other side. It's going to take a lot longer than we think. But there was one presentation talking about jobs. And this person likened it to a topological map, with hills and valleys. And the water level rising is sort of like the disappearance of jobs as they're automated. So some jobs will get automated quickly, and then others will be harder. They're at the top of the mountains. So, for example, strategists might be really hard to automate. And my view is that one of the tops of those mountains is roofer, okay? Because it's difficult to climb up on the roof with a load of shingles and then tack them in place. And it's not something that's going to get automated right away because someone would rather pay someone to do that. And eventually, I suspect that roofer will be a really high-paying job until such time as they finally build the general-purpose robot that does that too. And then when that happens, it's all over because all the jobs that we can think of are all automated. But now let's ask ourselves, what is that world like? Well, robots can then mine the ores. They can make the steel. They can build the manufacturing plants that build things. They can build the plants that build the robots. And as soon as you have robots building robots, then you have no limit to how much stuff can be made, right? So, Susan, you could have 20 robots doing the stuff for you, and everyone could have 20 robots doing the stuff for them. And so now think about that as an economy, okay? How does that change everything? And so what I'm suggesting is that the way the world will change is that we will have plenty of stuff, but we won't have jobs. And by the way, just to give you a sense, the global economy has been growing somewhere between 1 and 4% for this most of this last century. If you actually take that and model it forward, by the time of my book, 2161, the world will have somewhere between 15 and 20 times more stuff per person than we have today. Okay? So stuff, it becomes less important, okay? So now imagine that world which I'm suggesting will almost inevitably happen. A world where there's lots of stuff, there are lots of robots because we've eventually crossed that point of making a general purpose robot, and where we don't have any jobs. So then what is the world like at that point?
Right, so scarcity will not be an issue.
Exactly, right. And so imagine that world, though, what do we do? And again, I'm suggesting, so this is a hard science view. This is not going to happen tomorrow. It will continue to happen, but I'm suggesting that it will happen. And so as opposed to a lot of the sci-fi views of the future, you know, cyborgs and downloading brains and stuff that is actually not very doesn't abide by the physics very easily. I'm suggesting something that is a lot more mundane and, but I would suggest inevitable. and so then it focuses back on we as humans and what do we do with our time.
Well, and that your discussion assumes that there won't be any regulatory body preventing the manufacture of 20 robots per person. So it is like the nth degree kind of a concept. So how does that funnel into your story?
Okay, well, that's a great question. So as robots make robots, who owns the robots, right? I think there was just a report that Jeff Bezos is now worth $200 billion, right? So what happened? So my
he's gonna
story
own it
has
you.
Well, my story has the following conceit. It suggests that what has happened is since the United States is a country with deeply embedded property rights, that as this transition has happened and jobs disappeared, and there was growing social unrest, what the result was is that, number one, the means of production, the owners of the robot and factories, that was all nationalized and owned by everybody, but that the quid pro quo for that was that put in place a series of levels. So everyone was assigned a level from 1 at the top to 99 at the bottom, and essentially then these were merit based, so supposedly so that you could move up and down on levels based up on your own merit. But this is how society is organized. And then there's the question whether the assignment of levels is really fair, right? Or are they really based on merit, or is there some hereditary and other biases built into the system? So everyone's a level. And as the character Joe discovers, as he suddenly comes in contact with a protest movement, becomes himself more informed about the issues of social inequality brought about by the levels. So, by the way, anyone familiar with the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe and the number 42? I don't know if you're familiar with that, Susan.
I'm familiar with the book, but yeah.
So there's sort of a cornball joke in this sort of cult book. And it suggests that there are these aliens that build this supercomputer, and the computer churns away for 10 million years to try to answer the question, what is the meaning of life and of everything? And at the end of 10 million years, it finally stops, and the lights flash, and they all gather around. And out comes the answer, 42. Okay, so cornball joke. My my main character, Joe, he's a level 42. Okay. So slightly above average, right?
Right, right. So there,
so
your so you have this these levels, one being the topmost and 99 being, and it rings a lot like a caste system, which have been proven to not work in a couple ways. I mean, of course they're there, but they don't work either because of the upheaval in the in society. People don't like them, and people are constantly fighting against them. Or there's actual revolution against castes, which is what happened
exactly
with America, for one. How do you explain that those levels as something that is, well, or not for that matter, something that is a good thing or a bad thing?
Okay.
And do people in your world buy into it?
Well, there's that's the way it is, and people sort of, kind of, somewhat buy into it, but then there's a protest, and that's one of the central conflicts of the book. You know, it's a question of in the future, and if we still have social inequalities, so social equity has not been achieved, how does that happen? And, you know, ask you the question, do we have levels today? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Right? Yeah.
Of course.
And so,
yeah,
you know, sometimes speculative fiction, one of its purposes is to shine a light on more on the time it's written in rather than the future. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that this book, Unfettered Journey, is provides a distant mirror that will help us reflect on our own internal belief systems now and the perpetuation of privilege and inequalities. So the social justice theme is a very powerful theme in the book, and that's also central to the love story. So now I'm giving you a little bit of the levels of that are going on in this book. This is far from a genre sci-fi book. It's not at all a genre science book. It's something totally different.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you've read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. what other literature do you read?
Well,
I draw inspiration from, I should say.
I love the, you know, the standard canon a lot. I mean, even though they are flawed in their own ways, and particularly as we think about, you know, racism, all that, there are clearly flaws in older writers. But, you know, I still enjoy Hemingway and the Fitzgeralds, and I love Faulkner. And then on the sci-fi world, of course, there's Dune with Herbert, and Asimov was always a great love of mine. So, and I love the hard science views of the future because, as I said, I think it helps us to better understand and think about our future. And you know, there's a problem with science fiction generally, I think, today, and that is, it becomes more and more difficult to write it without having it suddenly become aged. You know, if someone wrote a book before 2007 and didn't see what the iPhone would do to our daily existence, that story might seem quite dated. And so I think many writers sort of throw up their hands and they don't try to do that. They write fantasy, or they write sci-fi genre books that don't respect science. So, you know, you have faster than light spaceships, and they ignore gravity and the effect on space travel on the human body and how hard this will be. I mean, it's not going to be easy at all to do any of this stuff. It's going to be really hard and really slow. And that's our reality. It's a different future. It's one that we can actually engineer. You know, and we're going to build something, and we're going to get out into space, and we'll be building space stations. I mean, that's in my book. You know, there's an orbital base around the moon that is beginning humans' baby steps to send out ships to explore other planets, circling other stars, other exoplanets. But, you know, even 140 years from now, we'll be still taking baby steps. So that's my vision. That's my hard science vision of what the future holds. And therefore, our focus need be on our own human social interactions and on taking care of the planet that we have now.
Yeah. So what would you say the main lesson or the main, I guess, empowering lesson that you want readers to take away from Unfettered Journey?
Well, as I pointed out, there are layers. I think what did some famous person say about the book? This, it's like onions; it has layers. I think that was Shrek or something, right? But the Unfettered Journey has, as I said, it's a hard science fiction and futuristic novel. It's actually an action and adventure story. It's a love story. I mean, I have some powerful women characters that I'm very, very proud of. I think all of the women readers, and actually my my 100% women editor assistants, all love my women characters. They are just real kick-ass. So I think that the love story is something for someone to take away. That's a story of, you know, two people trying to find purpose together in an imperfect world. So how do we do that?
Well, how do we do it now, right? Oh, this has been fun. So we're getting close to the end of the show, and I'm wondering if there is anything that you would like to tell our listeners that we haven't yet talked about.
Well, Susan, maybe one thing. I think there's also in the book a whole part about survival and, how do we survive with and without our technology. And so I'll say so I'll just give you a little spoiler alert, to look for that in the book. But first, no one really wants to go backward to a primitive time without technology. I mean, sometimes we glorify the past, but, you know, it would be hard. But secondly, then, given that, I think that in the future, we need to a collaborative approach to advance the whole human quest. And that collaborative approach then uses what humans are great at, which is social genius, that we working together can really accomplish phenomenal things. So that's my takeaway, is that I think the future continues to call for greater collaboration among humans, and we're just going to have to work through a complex technological world and in that environment figure out how to do the best for everyone together.
So I did have one last question. Is there a place for God in this future?
Ah, whoa! Now you're getting to the great questions. So I take a hard science view. I don't disallow science, but then I do ask the question: in that kind of world, what is the place for God if there is one? And that too is explored. So I'll encourage our readers get the book and and see what I think about that and how it might fit for someone who views the world through a scientific lens.
Right. And so, everybody, again, I'm talking with and have been talking with Gary Benger, and his latest novel, his debut novel, which just came out on Monday, September 7th, is called Unfettered Journey, and it's a speculative fiction. And go out and buy it. You can find Gary's book on the Amazon and all those online book distributors, brick-and-mortar bookstores. Please go to indiebound.org to get his book, as well as unfetteredjourney.com. You can find him there, and you can find him on Facebook and Twitter and Goodreads and LinkedIn and all those social sites that just, what is the list, an arm long, right? Thank you so much for being on the show. I sure appreciated talking with you and hearing all about your latest novel, Unfettered Journey. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Susan. It's been a pleasure.
The pleasure's been mine. Thank you. Bye-bye. Again, everybody, that was Gary Bengier, and you can find his novel at unfetteredjourney.com, and of course on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and you can check him out on Goodreads and all those places, Facebook. It just came out. It sounds fascinating. Please go out and buy it, and you can find me at susanwingate.com, and you can find out all about Dialogue again at dialogue-betweenthelines.com. And until next week, whoo! Bye-bye.